This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Billions or even trillions more Federal Reserve notes in circulation at the, you know, at the whim of Ben Bernanke or whoever.
Another issue with money at the moment is that it is tends to collect in a smaller number of hands or pockets than at any other time in the history of our money system. Most people, I guess, are aware of the idea of the 99%, and really what that means is that most of the money just systemically tends to fall right into a smaller number of hands.
Right. The disparity in wealth is getting huger all the time. And what is it? What causes that? Can anybody say?
Well, for one thing, it's because money makes money. You know, that's the way that capitalism works, is money is invested in pursuits, and then those pursuits make more money. So people who are able to produce things are able to make money, and people who do not have, you know, the capital available to produce things aren't making as much money, and obviously aren't. You know, we can see by looking at the economic system that we've got that they are also not able to, you know, accumulate money through savings, you know, on a societal level as much as maybe they were 50 years ago or something like that.
And we also have a money system that's basically based on debt, right? And
yeah.
So the whole idea with that is that debt creates, I mean, the banks are creating debt to, like you have to go into debt to get a loan, but that's how the bank is actually making its money.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a big problem with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
when you think about it, you know, I mean, if every dollar that's issued out is a note based on debt, I mean, the only way to pay off all the debt is to give the bank back all their dollars, and
plus
then we don't have
money.
Any dollars. Yeah, plus more money on top of that. Where does the interest come from? You know, that's all that can happen is the debt can just keep getting bigger and bigger. So it's a very broken system, and something should be done about it for sure. And that's why I got so interested in Bitcoin, is because, you know, for about the last like 10 or 15 years, I've been really getting more and more into politics. And, you know, if you just follow the money, you see everything. You know, there's an old saying, you know, follow the money and you'll find the truth. And money in politics is the root behind like so many, if not all, of the world's problems right now. I mean, when you realize that the most lucrative thing that can happen for a bank is war, then, you know, you really gain an understanding of how badly something needs to be done.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Stephen, did you have anything to say?
And the main part that I really want to see a change in is having the free market available. And so right now in the money system, what we have is a complete monopoly on the ability to print money. And where those decisions are made, it's all behind closed doors by the Federal Reserve and with the banks. So not having that free market allows a lot of dysfunction to build up in the system. You know, when the banks got into trouble, all the taxpayers had to bail them out. So we all end up paying for that, and they get off scot-free. So, you know, we need to open it up so that there's competition within currencies and have that free market dynamic available.
If you get rid of the legal tender laws, basically you could have good competition between the currencies.
The legal tender laws. Could you explain that more, Carl?
Well, the government prints money, and they require us to use it for specific transactions, covering the payment of debt. So if you go into debt, you can't pay them back with Disney dollars or, you know, Bitcoin. They require you to use legal tender, and it basically makes everybody required to use the dollar.
Right. Right. And because we have to use the dollar, we have to abide by the rules and the ways that the dollars work. And if we didn't have to use the dollar, what would happen then?
Ooh, gosh. A lot of people say competition in the currency would be a really good thing, and some people say really bad thing. I mean, it'd be hard to collect taxes if you were 50 currencies out there. And you couldn't pay in dollars. So I think it would cause a lot of dismay, and that's what they're trying to avoid.
Uh-huh. So there, like, right off, and this was the thing when I started looking at Bitcoin, there's good things about it and bad things about it. But Kurt, did you get the thing up about the Bitcoin, the little 1 minute video? Okay, could you play that?
What is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is the first decentralized digital currency. Bitcoins are digital coins you can send through the internet. Compared to other alternatives, Bitcoins have a number of advantages. Bitcoins are transferred directly from person to person via the net, without going through a bank or clearinghouse. This means that the fees are much lower, you can use them in every country, your account cannot be frozen, and there are no prerequisites or arbitrary limits. Let's look at how it works. Bitcoins are generated all over the internet by anybody running a free application called a Bitcoin miner. Mining requires a certain amount of work for each block of coins. This amount is automatically adjusted by the network such that Bitcoins are always created at a predictable and limited rate. Your Bitcoins are stored in your digital wallet, which might look familiar if you use online banking. When you transfer Bitcoins, an electronic signature is added. After a few minutes, the transaction is verified by a miner and permanently and anonymously stored in the network. The Bitcoin software is completely open source, and anybody can review the code. Bitcoin is changing finance the same way the web changed publishing. When everyone has access to a global market, great ideas flourish. Let's look at some examples of how Bitcoins are already used today. You can purchase video games, gifts, books, servers, and alpaca socks. Several currency exchanges exist where you can trade your Bitcoins for dollars, euros, and more. Bitcoins are a great way for small businesses and freelancers to get noticed. It doesn't cost anything to start accepting them, there are no chargebacks or fees, and you'll get additional business from the Bitcoin economy. For your first Bitcoins and more information, visit weusecoins.com.
So that was a quick, pretty positive summary of Bitcoin, just for a minute and a half. And so just to get started, you both are miners, Michael and Laura, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how did you guys get into this?
Well, I like I said, you know, really got into politics and started following the money, and I started watching the Max Keiser Report, which is a show on RT, and he did a piece on Bitcoins. He had a guest on that was a Bitcoin entrepreneur. And I took an interest in it, and was definitely skeptical at first, and did some research, and it's like a light just went on in my head. I was like, this is money without banks. You know, if you would have told me 10 years ago you could have money without banks, I would say that's like rain without sky. You know, it's just not possible. But the more I researched it, and the more I learned about it, just here I am 2 years later, and it's like all I ever talk about.
And then that was just right around the time we were getting married, and as a kind of a wedding present, I bought a bunch of basically a computer array to mine Bitcoins with, and we sort of took it from there. And it's definitely been a lot of learning on the way. We made a lot of mistakes early on, and when we started, Bitcoins weren't worth very much, but we were able to make it work at least well enough to pay for itself, and eventually started living off of it more and more.
And like, Bitcoins are worth more now. That's sort of amazing to me. I mean, to me, it's sort of like play money, but it's becoming more valuable.
Oh, man. I mean, nothing compares. I mean, if you look at, like, the dot-com boom, back in the Clinton years, when you'd have stocks go from being worth a nickel to, $100, that's basically the only thing that you can compare to it when you look at how much the value has gone up. And that's mostly because of scarcity. It's because of supply and demand. Unlike Federal Reserve notes, there is a finite number of Bitcoins. They can only issue about 25 of them about every 10 minutes. And it's getting harder and harder to find those 25 Bitcoins. It takes very powerful specialty equipment to compete, as a Bitcoin miner these days. But that's why the value keeps going up, and I expect it will keep going up.
As more people learn about how Bitcoins work, and that they're a secure way to store money, and also a good way to exchange money for different things, And also, I think as time goes on and we see more applications of the Bitcoin software as it is now, you know, it's been around for a while and a lot of smart people have been working on it. But as it gains more attention, people will be able to see any problems. You know, people have criticized it for being hard to use. But I think as more people get on board, it'll become easier and easier because, you know, we'll all be able to put our heads together and come up with, you know, ways to make make it just as easy as using a credit card or, you know, a smartphone app or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and it already is. There's, like, you know, with BitPay, for example, that's the easiest way for a merchant to get involved, you know, and it immediately converts. I mean, Steve was at, Steve, you know a bit more about BitPay than I think. That's more of a merchant thing than a mining thing.
Yeah, I mean, BitPay works great. You know, there's a couple of things to understand about Bitcoin is that, you know, first of all, there's no Bitcoin company. You know, there's no core organization that runs the network.
Bitcoin, no bank, no government. Love it.
Yeah, there's no government, no organization, no company behind it. It's it's just a global project. Bitcoin is actually a new technology. And people all over the world are getting on it on the internet and connecting to this network. And so it's all a big cooperative effort. Mm-hmm. And so Bitcoin is a currency, but it's also just a payment technology. So you can use it to send money.
Like PayPal, except peer-to-peer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, PayPal is an actual company, though, and this is lots of companies are plugging into this new, it's a new financial network. And, you know, a lot of people are worried about the kind of the speculation. Bitcoin has been growing tremendously lately.
Well, I know Laura, when I just went on it, it was like 130, it went down to 55, or went up to 260, down to 55, and now it's 150.
Right.
And that's only in 3 weeks.
Yeah, you know, and just a few months ago, it was only worth $15 per Bitcoin, so now it's up a whole lot. There's a lot of risk in it, and that's just the way the market goes when it's growing really fast, so it's changing rapidly, and it's very volatile.
At the moment, because, like I mentioned, you know, it's only been around for a while, there's a few kind of choke points to the system in a way. I guess that's currently one of the downsides. There's a number of exchanges, but one of them has most of the use, I guess.
And Mt. Gox does about 80% of the Bitcoin to currency exchanges.
Yeah. So, you know, there have been problems in the sort of concentration of people coming through, you know, to change their U.S. dollars and other currencies into Bitcoins. I think as it spreads out, you know, there'll be kind of more competition inherent in the system, and it'll kind of, you know, details will be less important to the overall Bitcoin economy, basically.
I just want to interrupt here. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter with the Recovery Zone. I'm talking to people here who are local experts on Bitcoin and also an alternative currency expert, community currency, Carl Mullen of PDX Currency. And just a couple of little things, and then I want to get to the PDX currency part. You mentioned that it was going to be deflation, that the value would hold. It would be there's only so many bitcoins, eventually 21 million by 2040 or something.
Yeah.
But the deal is that some of the complaints are then that makes it kind of a deflationary currency, that people are going to start hoarding it because it gets more and more valuable. And in a way, it seems that the point of currency is to have an exchange going on where people are spending the money and putting it back into the community. And that seems antithetical with something that people might hoard.
Sure. I mean, you know, the fundamentals of Bitcoin is it was built after gold. So a lot of the questions about the economics of Bitcoin can be asked just by looking at, well, how does gold work? So if you're in kind of the Ron Paul camp and you believe in sound money and you want a gold standard, you want the United States to return to the gold standard like it was on for hundreds of years when our country was growing and there was a lot of prosperity, then you know, that's kind of the way Bitcoin works. You know, with gold, there's a limited amount, so there's no central authority that can print more of it and debase the currency and cause inflation. In an inflationary environment, you have everyone who is getting poorer, essentially. They're losing purchasing power. Bitcoin operates a lot more like a tech stock, where people who get into the system early and, you know, put their purchasing power into it and help support that venture, help support the growth of that economy, are making an investment, and they're going to see a return on that. They're going to see an increased purchasing power as Bitcoin continues to grow.
But what about the fact that it is, like, sort of against the banks, and it is on a certain an incredible sideline to the government money system? The government can put a stop to it at certain points, right? Can it be legislated?
Nope. That's the one of the most beautiful things about it is, you know, think of all the peer-to-peer file sharing stuff that the government has tried to stop so far, you know, BitTorrent and Pirate Bay and stuff like that. People are still, you know, pirating music online. They're still pirating movies and software online. The government hasn't been able to stop it because they'd have to shut down the whole internet in order to accomplish that. They have to shut down every single node on the network in order to shut down a peer-to-peer network.
And for that matter, Bitcoin is international, so any one government can do what they like. In fact, it seems likely to me that at some point some government is gonna, you know, try and see what they can do against it. But in the face of the whole rest of the world, you know, I don't know how far they're gonna get shutting it down.
Yeah, it's pretty much the most powerful computer network on Earth. Several colleges, MIT, they teamed up with like 10 other colleges around the country, tried to execute what's called a 51% attack on the Bitcoin network. And that's where you basically get up to the point where you are controlling 51% of the power of the Bitcoin network. I think they got up to like 8 or 9%. It's impossible to put together that much power to execute any kind of attack on the network itself.
Well, it can't. I don't know about attacking the network, but Carl, you mentioned something to me about how there can be something where when someone wants to actually use their bitcoins and take them to an exchange and get dollars back, that can be legislated out or that can be stopped somehow.
When the government and this has happened to other digital currencies in years past, when the government can't go after the currency, they go after the exchange agents, and they're right now just coming out with some guidance and some guidelines on new regulations as the regulations catch up with technology, and so they'll likely regulate the exchange agents and the third party agents like BitPay, mm-hmm. and they even actually wrote in there, which is pretty rare to see, that. The recent guidelines that came out in March, they said if you're a Bitcoin miner, it doesn't actually say Bitcoin, mm-hmm. but it says miner, and you mine and sell those, you're going to be required to have a money transmitting license. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just guidelines, and it usually takes 18 months or, you know, mm-hmm. 2 years to put that into regulations. But they're on it. I mean, the government's got some smart lawyers, and mm-hmm. you know, they're not going to have such strict cash regulations and then just turn their head and forget about this. You know, mm-hmm. they eventually catch up, but you know, it's not a big deal. People in the business would eventually just go and get licensing.
And not only that, but you know, there was some worry that the government would crack down on digital currencies altogether, but it doesn't look like that's the, you know, tack they're taking. I know Amazon has just come out with their own, like, digital currency that they can – I mean, it's not the same type of thing as Bitcoin exactly, but it is a digital money that apparently they can be transacted both with them and other people apparently. And there's all kinds of, you know, money systems from, you know, Linden Dollars in Second Life. Is that it?
Right.
You know, World of Warcraft.
Things
gold.
Like that are being used kind of in lieu of money already. I think a lot of people have heard about, you know, Chinese prisoners being forced to, you know, mine World of Warcraft money. And I've known people who have, you know, played video games literally for their rent, you know, because that was their interest and their skill, and they were able to make enough money doing it. So, you know, there doesn't seem to be too much interest in shutting these things down. But yeah, I definitely agree. Regulating the exchanges and the producers are going to be a big step. Although with Bitcoin, a lot of people are mining just tiny amounts. You know, almost anyone can put a Bitcoin miner on their regular computer, and they might only make, you know, a thousandth of a Bitcoin a week or a day. But for the government to go after people mining on that level would just not be practical at all.
I'd like to let listeners know, by the way, you can call in and ask questions too. The number here is 503-231-8187. But that's another aspect of it. A lot of people are just making a little bit with it, but some people have made a lot, especially the early adopters, as it were. And what do you say to the idea that it's actually kind of really just a bubble or a Ponzi scheme or some kind of pyramid scam or that kind of thing?
Well, it's definitely not a Ponzi scheme. That would be confusion, because in a Ponzi scheme, the way it works is everyone who gets in at the end loses their money. And Bitcoin, you can definitely lose money on it if you get in at the wrong time. But in the long term, the growth has just been upward, and so it actually behaves much more like a stock. You know, so in the same way that you could kind of gamble by playing on the New York Stock Exchange, that's the same way that Bitcoin operates.
And the same way that people speculate that it could be manipulated, you know, the same way stocks can be manipulated if somebody owns a large percentage of them or can control the information. But that's not a problem with, Bitcoin itself.
Laura, do you think that more exchange agents on there are taking some of the burden off of Mt. Gox would reduce the kind of up and down cycle with them?
Yeah, I definitely think so, because a lot of what we've seen over the last few weeks has been directly related to DDoS attacks on Mt. Gox.
That's denial of service.
Yeah, where, people who either are, trying to manipulate the markets or trying to maybe discredit. There's definitely been thoughts that people are trying to discredit Bitcoin in general and are trying to make the prices unstable. And when nobody can sell their Bitcoins and get their money out, it tends to, affect the confidence in the whole thing. So if there were a few more reliable exchanges in different countries, for example, that were maybe not vulnerable all to the same regulations or whatnot, then I think there would be a lot more confidence, because if you had Bitcoins and you wanted dollars, you wouldn't have to worry about one particular, like I said before, kind of choke point in the system.
Isaac, you had something?
Yeah, one of the beauties of the open source systems are that these kind of issues, these bottlenecks, immediately become opportunities for other people. So some other exchanges such as Bitstamp and BTCe have already been growing in strength. And recently, when Mt. Gox had an issue where their service went down for 3 hours, the drop in price was significantly lower than it had been previously. So that solution is already coming into effect.
We have a caller. Harriet, would you like to ask your question?
Yes, thank you. And I'm on the road, so I'm going to try and talk loud and listen loud.
Okay.
I'm just in listening to the show. I'm not real excited about Bitcoins. I'm real excited about complementary currencies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm most excited about complementary currencies that really help humans identify our values and what we value, and be able to use currencies to actually reflect those values. And I don't see Bitcoin doing that, as opposed to time dollars and currency systems that really help build local communities. So the Bitcoin thing seems like we're valuing people who have computer skills and, can go on a computer and find these little Bitcoins. It's like digital gold.
Well, that's
terribly fine about the gold thing either, because you can't eat gold, you can't build love from gold. So I just wonder what your thoughts are about Bitcoins and what they do to human values and helping to heal the planet. And build
right, and I do want to get to the community currency part of this, but I'll let Stephen say something really quickly, and then we're going to talk with Carl.
Sure. Yeah, I just want to jump in, and I totally hear what you're saying there about human values, and it's really important that we come together as communities and focus on those things. The value that Bitcoin is bringing forward is that it is a currency of non-discrimination. So, no one controls this thing, and it's something that everyone can use as a medium of exchange, and no one can say who can or can't use it.
It's non-political.
Yeah, so, it's not going to be just a local currency because we're not going to exclude other people from using it. Now, this is a global currency that everyone is able to use and share all over, and it's also totally complementary to other forms of currency and local currency and gift economies and barter and mm-hmm. all those other means of exchange.
And in other countries where their currency might not be valuable based on the instability of their governments, they can still use bitcoins, which are based on the strength of the network. So if they have things of value or if they want things of value, they have a means to, buy and sell them that's available to them despite the political aspects of what might be going on for them.
Right. Well, I know it's very easy to like get Bitcoin across borders, that kind of thing. Incredibly easy. But I do want to get to Carl because we're going to run out of time here. So Carl, we got a half hour to go, but I meant to have Carl on the last 10 minutes and he still hasn't said a word. So Carl, could you just explain a little bit about Bridgetown Bucks and how that works as compared to? But let me first say I'm talking with Bitcoin people and with community currency people here on KBOO Portland on the Recovery Zone, and we're going to just see how this works. Okay, so Carl, get going here.
Hey, thank you. Bridgetown Bucks is a community currency. It's a complementary currency, and it's different from Bitcoin in that. Bitcoin is an alternative currency. It's an alternative to using the dollar or the euro, and it directly competes with national money. So you're competing with the dollar, you're competing with the euro, and it's a global currency. Community currency or local currency complements the dollar. And what it does is it fills in the spaces that the dollar leaves behind. It fills the gaps. If you have a area of your neighborhood or your community where there's not a lot of national dollars circulating, we can create a local currency to fill those gaps. And basically what we do is we match unused resources in the community with unmet needs. So you have a lot of people who want to work. You have a lot of work to be done. But there's no money to pay each other. So we create a currency like a mutual credit currency and make sure everybody gets the transactions and pays each other. So we fill the gap where national dollars don't go. And Bridgetown Bucks has a commercial purpose to it. And basically what it does is it pulls shoppers out of the big box stores because places like Walmart and Target do not accept local currency. And it sends those shoppers into locally owned stores and merchants and vendors. And so it boosts the local economy. And it basically takes money out of the pocket of the big corporations. And as the local currency dollars circulate in the area, they don't leave bound for out of state corporate headquarters or out of country foreign suppliers. So they stay in the area and they build the economy.
So in a way, it's the opposite of Bitcoin, where Bitcoin's like sending money all over the world really easily. This keeps money right here at home.
Well, it's not apples and oranges. It's apples and steaks.
I love spending my bitcoins locally. I do it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. We're paying our babysitter in Bitcoin. That's watching our daughter right now. So
that's awesome. The difference here, you see, is she can take those bitcoins and spend them in China or Russia or anywhere she wants, and the community currency must stay in the area. It has no value once you get out of Portland. Mm-hmm. So it stays here and it continues to circulate, and that builds up a little bit.
Apples and steaks. We have another caller. Tomas, what would you like to ask?
Hi. I guess I just mostly have a comment. I mean, I really like the idea of the Bridgetown Bucks. That's the kind of thing that can support actual economic development, whereas Bitcoin seems like a very purely capitalist idea. And the fact that the people who are on the show that are talking about how excited they are about Bitcoin. I mean, they're talking about mining what? I mean, it's not, I understand the problems with the US dollar, but you're not doing anything. And like to think about Bitcoin as an investment the same way that thinking about gold is an investment, like gold at least has some industrial utility, although it's mostly not used for that whatsoever. But Bitcoin like has no utility whatsoever. So like to think about it as an investment to make money, to be the idea of becoming wealthy and powerful off of controlling something that exists purely inside of a computer and doesn't actually produce anything is really disgusting to me.
Okay, you know, actually, I gotta say, there is this quote I ran across that it's a neoliberal project where the accumulation of wealth is its own end. Economic activity is directed toward outcompeting others rather than achieving tangible social or even technological goals. And individuals leverage capital for massive profits. Now, that is a lot of the stuff that I was running across when I was looking at Bitcoin. And do you guys have some answers for that?
I think that the caller has brought up a couple of really important points. And I want to talk to a differentiation between two of the concerns that were addressed in the beginning of the show about money and how that compares to Bridgetown bucks and Bitcoins. So one of the concerns is centralization of wealth, and one of the major issues that contributes to that is when we have larger and larger corporations, those big box stores that we talked about, taking a higher and higher percentage of the money. More and more of wealth is filtered into that shrinking 1%. And so both Bitcoin and Bridgetown bucks contribute to a solution to that, in that they support local merchants. They support small merchants. So while Bitcoin is used globally, it's largely adopted by small merchants the same way as Bridgetown bucks. Now, that's different from the concern about whether currency is spent and kept locally and shifts globally. So that's a second concern that Bridgetown bucks is addressing. Now, the caller also is talking to some of the varying reasons why people get involved or are excited about Bitcoins. And while certainly there are some people who are involved and excited only for the potential of increasing their personal wealth, there are also people who have a great deal of ideological interest in moving the control of the monetary system away from the government and a small group of people into an open source and global environment. And for those people who see the entire world as part of our community and hold the ideals of equality high, Bitcoin is exciting for very different reasons.
Also, the caller mentioned the idea that Bitcoins are not based on anything, but I think that that's a misconception, because what mining is doing is adding to the Bitcoin network, and the network is based on cryptography, which is basically the muscle of the internet. Cryptography represents, in my opinion, the solid walls that can't be undermined. So when you're talking about being on the internet, if you don't want to, have the potential for people to push you around using, various hacking or whatnot, cryptography is what you need. And the Bitcoin network has basically took the computer power of everyone who has ever been mining and sets it up, as this network. I believe that the network has a lot of value and can be used in a lot of different ways in addition to just, individual use of money.
Yeah, I think maybe what he was getting at is, even for me, it's like, I don't understand it. I really, I've been reading about it forever, but it just doesn't seem to be a real thing.
What a lot of people have a problem, grasping is where Bitcoin gets its intrinsic value. And that's really, the caller mentioned that.
Yeah.
What are they? They're mining what? They're mining nothing. But each Bitcoin has a cryptographic code, as Laura was mentioning there. That cryptographic code needs to, it needs to be secured and and it needs to be found, and it requires that computer strength. So Bitcoin actually gets its intrinsic value from the computer strength behind it, as well as the electricity that it takes to make a Bitcoin. An argument that I saw very handily refuted on the forums was that, you know, people say that it's an environmental concern because it uses a lot of electricity to run the computers that make these Bitcoins. But, you know, how much electricity do you think the bank tower uses? You know, the U.S. bank tower downtown, or any of the bank towers, you know, the Bank of America tower. I mean, the banking system uses a lot more electricity and also does a lot more damage.
We have two more callers, by the way.
I just want to make a comment on that last caller.
Real quickly.
You know, the objection that I heard brought up was similar to what a lot of people say about money in general. It's like, well, why are you trading these worthless pieces of paper around? You know, why are you accumulating, you know, digits in your bank account when you could be doing something out there in the world? And, you know, that there's a truth to that, and that there is a mentality in our society where people can get carried away and just having money for money's sake without actually doing something with it to change the world. You know, barter systems only scale so far. So, you know, if you want to get off of money all the way, I mean, you're not interested in using money, you want to go back to barter, then yeah, you know, Bitcoin probably has nothing to offer you in that case. But if you still use money, you know, if you're still using MasterCard and Visa and your dollars, then Bitcoin is something worth looking at because it's a new type of money system.
And essentially, money is based on faith. I mean, that's what we're running into all the time. But who's Ian is on the phone? Ian.
Yes.
Could you quickly ask a question?
Well, I more just had a comment. I never heard about the PDX bus, but...
Yeah, I want to talk a little more about those, too. Okay.
I like the idea. I'll try and be quick, but in my opinion, Bitcoin, it's more of the value comes from the concept that it represents, in that it's a free exchange of a good that, you know, can use globally, and... it's not controlled by a central authority. So that's the actual value of Bitcoin, in my opinion, is that the function that it serves as opposed to the dollar worth or something else. So in that sense, cryptocurrency will always exist.
Yeah, cryptocurrency does seem to be something that's in the works one way or another. Maybe it won't in the end be Bitcoin.
Technology that will always be with humanity from now on, now that it's been discovered that it's possible.
But and thanks for your comment, Ian. I want to get back again to Carl, though. You were talking about Bridgetown Bucks. You know, they're not here now, right? Are they? And when are they expected to be here?
We haven't printed up. We got about $500,000 of them printed up right now, and they're all ready to go.
And you're working with banks to make this work.
The local credit unions and local banks, and some people in the city. Yes.
So what's going to make someone want to use a Bridgetown Buck when they can't use it all over the place?
Well, it's very exciting because the only way to get a Bridgetown Buck is to walk into the participating bank or credit union and exchange your national dollars for it. So if you walk into the credit union and you give them $9.50, you receive $10 in Bridgetown Bucks. So the consumers who put the currency into circulation actually have incentive. They make 5%. So if you want to go out and go shopping, or you want to buy a case of wine at your local, you know, store, and you want to save 5% on all your purchases, this is a good way to do it. And basically, the real power with this currency, it comes into effect when it continues to circulate in the community. If you think of the U.S. like 70 years ago, when there was a butcher shop and a bakery and a pharmacy and the shoe store, and a dollar that went into circulation in the town would go through 20 to 30 transactions before it was actually spent on an imported good. And nowadays, you have these giant Walmarts and Targets and McDonald's and everywhere else where when you spend a dollar at that establishment, about 80 cents of it immediately leaves your area. And so it's called the local multiplier effect. And basically, we think we can get about a 5 or 6 transactions out of a Bridgetown Buck before it goes back into the credit union. Whereas if you walk into a Taco Bell or any of those big chain stores and you spend it, that dollar's gone. and it won't come back to your community. It's, you know, went out of state or out of the country to a supplier.
And this is happening right now with Berkshires in Massachusetts, right?
Yes, Berkshires is the most popular commercial purpose local currency in the country. Now, they've been in operation since 2006, and there's 2.7 million of them that have been circulated. And they have about 500 merchants spread across four states. So they have a very good track record, very good success record. And I was just looking at the Berkshire Merchant of the Month, and it's a gourmet foods store up there, and he does a tremendous amount of business accepting Berkshires for his locally, you know, produced goods. And in 5 years, he's never exchanged one back through the credit union. He's always found people, local vendors, local suppliers, and source goods where he could respend the currency around town. And that's where the power comes in with the currency.
And it really becomes a sideline currency that's not in the dollar world at all.
Yeah, it doesn't compete with anything.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to use it, it's voluntary, no problem.
Right.
You know, if you want to make 5% and get a little discount on town and support your local merchants, what we're asking is
go to the bank and buy some.
Exactly. People take about 10% of their local, their monthly shopping bill and try and put that towards the local vendors.
Okay, and we have one more caller. Joanne, what would you like to ask? And
well,
do it quickly.
I'm guessing from the system is that unless you use computers, it's not going to work for you. And if you're on welfare or Social Security income, it's not going to work for you.
You're talking about Bitcoin again.
And also, I think you have to have personal, good personal brain power. But I'll get off the telephone.
Okay. Okay, we're talking. That goes back to Bitcoin. Compared to Bridgetown Bucks, it seems like Bitcoin is something that you have to be online. You have to have internet access. And that could be a problem for people who don't have that. And they're like a lot of people all over the world don't really have that yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an internet currency, so yeah, you do pretty much need to be on the internet to use it. I mean, but that's like, you know, if you're in Europe, you know, you're using euros over there because that's the currency of the region over there. You know, it's in a way the internet is kind of its own place,
its own world.
Yeah, its own little world. So you know, it has its own currency, that currency being Bitcoin, you know. I actually wanted to ask just really, really quickly, you know, Bitcoin is peer-to-peer. Bridgetown Bucks, are those, I mean, is that like a nonprofit thing, or is there a central issuing authority, or who actually makes them?
It's a nonprofit. PDX Currency Corp is an Oregon nonprofit, and they print up the currency, and there's no there's no for-profit in it. The dollars are exchanged back and forth, and there's no fees or transactions or anything like that. So, yeah, it's strictly nonprofit.
Is there an exchange rate for dollars to Bridgetown Bucks?
The way it works is if you go into the they're one Bridgetown Buck for $1, but if you go into the credit union and you give them $9.50. And they give you 10 Bridgetown Bucks. That money stays on deposit with the credit union as the Bridgetown Bucks circulates around town. And it's always there on deposit. It's never loaned out, never taken anywhere. And then whenever a merchant needs to go back, or anyone needs to go back and exchange that to national currency, they bring the 10 back and they get the 950. So on the way out, as a sort of disincentive for taking the currency out of circulation, you charge the fee of 5%, which is the same fee that was, you know, given to the person who put it into circulation. But on a brighter note, merchants can expense that fee just like they would the Visa charges, I think, 3% per transaction, or American Express.
Credit cards
used to charge 5%. You know, if you go to a store and you swipe your debit card, the merchant gets, you know, has to pay a fee every time you do that. So it's not unlike that, and you can't expense the fee, and the merchants really haven't had any problems with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's something similar with Bitcoin, which is the merchant service processing. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this, you know, speculation, and people want to invest in Bitcoin. But the cool part about Bitcoin is that if you're a merchant, if you're a local store or shop here in Portland, you can accept Bitcoin with zero risk. And the way that works is when someone comes to check out, and you know, maybe they've bought, you know, $20 worth of stuff at your store. And as they're checking out, you just say, well, you know, how would you like to pay, you know, MasterCard, Visa, or Bitcoin? And they could actually...
Or Bridgetown Bucks.
Or Bridgetown Bucks, yeah. And so you could just use whatever payment method you want. And if you have your smartphone, then you could just scan that against their smartphone and accept the payment. And the merchant doesn't have to worry about, you know, what are they going to do with these Bitcoins now? there's third-party services that automatically convert the bitcoins into dollars and put it into your bank account, just like Square or any other payment processor does.
Yeah, and the funny thing about that is most of the time the fees for the transaction end up being less than what, you know, Visa or MasterCard or whichever bank you use would have normally charged you.
PayPal.
I mean, yeah, PayPal. Yeah. I mean, the thing about a peer-to-peer network is there isn't a fat cat on top making a bunch of money off of it. You know, it's just it's between everyone that's using the network itself. So there's not really any fees or anything with a Bitcoin transaction in and of itself. Whereas with other more centralized forms of exchange, there's always just huge fees, and those add up.
Isaac, you have a comment, but I just want to let people know we're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter with the Recovery Zone, and we're talking about money and what's wrong with the money we have now, and how Bitcoin or Bridgetown Bucks, alternative currencies or cryptocurrencies, might possibly address some of those issues and maybe what some of their pitfalls are. And so, Isaac, what did you have to say?
Sure. I just wanted to add to that comment that currently if you use Visa, MasterCard, or American Express, in a sense you're already using an electronic currency, the difference being that that's a very closed currency where Visa, MasterCard, and to a lesser extent American Express own a monopoly on that system. And so they can set whatever rates they want to deduct from the merchant who's using it. The difference here with Bitcoin is that it's open source, meaning anyone with some programming knowledge can come in and develop a system to accept it and do the same sort of exchange system into cash. And as a result of that, you have competition. And so the percentage, instead of being 3 to 5%, is going to be closer to 1% currently and may even trend down in the future.
But I was thinking that one possibility or problem, again, is merchants taking, even small merchants, taking Bitcoin compared to Bridgetown Bucks if they are worried about the volatility of it. I think that might be a problem. You know, like I take a Bitcoin and the next thing I know it's worth,
right,
$55 instead of yesterday it was $260.
Yeah. So there's companies coming out all the time that they actually guarantee that purchase rate. So if you check out and you're charging your customer $20, then you'll check out with Bitcoin and you just type in $20. You don't even have to worry about converting the currency, whatever. It just automatically puts on the screen how many Bitcoins that's going to be. And that payment processor guarantees that you get the $20 into your bank account. And so that's part of that 1% fee. Companies like BitPay.com and Coinbase.com are already offering that service, and they're already processing millions of dollars worth of transactions per month right now.
Did you have something, Carl?
Well, on a local currency note, if you think of currency in your community as blood, the more currency you have and the more, powerful the flow is, the more healthy everything is. And if you have parts of the community that don't have a good flow of dollars, then they get sick and die off. So what we try to do is we try to increase the flow of currencies in the local market. We try to source more goods, everyday goods from Portland area shops, and build networks where the Portland area shops are resourcing their goods from local distributors or local suppliers. And this tends to keep the economy a little bit more healthy than if you shop and they're sending the money off to, Arkansas or China or somewhere like that. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, I could say that, Harp Cafe in Selwood is a really great vegan restaurant where you can use Bitcoins to purchase food there. And that's one of my favorite places to go get a meal.
Well, it sounds like one of the things that both of us, or all six of us here, or whatever, five, want to have happen is more more local economy, more happening in the local economy is important even to Bitcoin people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I definitely want to see that. And I want to see prosperity around the world also. I'm aware that, Bitcoin is opening up opportunities in Africa for all kinds of people that have been locked off of the system and haven't been able to make online purchases. And that's going to be enabling them to do so. So I want to see that mm-hmm. prosperity over there too.
Yeah, one of the basic, requirements for capitalism at its basic form, where the basically the exchange of capital around the world is to have low transaction costs, you know, and Bitcoin in that way, I think, is one way that, you know, we'll get, I guess, more blood flowing all over the world, not just in the local economy, which is, of course, like really important. But at the same time, yeah, I'm definitely excited to see how it, you know, encourages, you know, the world money.
Well, exchange. when I hear you guys talking, it sounds like Bridgetown Bucks is sort of a way of like shrinking the whole big box world and all that corporate whatever, and that Bitcoin is sort of more of a way of shrinking the banking world. I mean, would it actually shrink the banking world?
Well, you know, I like to compare it to what MP3s did to music. You know, that's what Bitcoin does to currency, because you have a new technology here that obsoletes the old technology. And as a result, the consumer is really the one that wins. Just like, you know, instead of having to buy a whole album for, you know, $15, $18, $20, people can instead download, you know, some songs off of the internet for $1 each. You know, so that's a good example of the, you know, the consumer really being the one that benefits from this new technology. Yeah, Bitcoin basically does that. It, you know, it gives people more control over the money that they're using, because instead of a central issuing authority like a bank or a government, Bitcoin is on a peer-to-peer network. So, you know, if money is power and we want to, you know, bring power to the people, then I really do think that that's what Bitcoin does. It gives people control over the money that they're using instead of being forced to use the money system that's, you know, that's being pushed on them.
But then I have a question for Carl, because if it sounds like Bridgetown Bucks relies on banks, and would that if the banks are, I mean, like, there's a problem?
A credit union, anyway. I mean, a credit union is certainly better than a bank, you know, but still it's...
Well, you see, there's a point in the U.S. where the regulations take over concerning cash transactions. And in order for us to operate, we want the bank to be handling the cash transaction so we don't have to be licensed as a money transmitter and financial service business. So the bank handles all that. They're already licensed. And when you go in, if you have a big stack of 10,000 Bridgetown Bucks, they're going to ask you to fill out some currency forms.
Right.
So, you know, they take care of the financial transactions and the regulations for us. So
who knows? Maybe someday Bitcoin and Bridgetown Bucks work together. But we have one more caller, and then we're going to – what's your name? Richard, what's your name? I mean, what's your question?
Well, I kind of just had a couple points. I've heard of the Bridgetown Bucks ideas. I know they do it in New Zealand and different things. The Bitcoin I'm still trying to understand, because it does sound like poor people will be pretty disenfranchised from the whole thing if you don't have some kind of computer set up that you can mine these things, which, again, I don't see what –
You don't have to mine them. You can also buy them, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would be the point of that? But and then mining them, I still don't understand exactly what they're doing. And it does seem like, as the folks talk about Bitcoin, it seems like a way to make money. It's like, well, we don't, you know, we'll get away from the banks, but it seems like a way to make money. It seems like the New York Times, I thought, had something on those two brothers that had to do with Facebook that are watching mm-hmm. their shares and it go up and down and, you know, losing millions, making millions. So it seems like it's all part of it. You might be getting away from big banks, but it sure seems like it's just the
It's same still about deal. Getting rich, maybe.
It seems to be is where Bridgetown Bucks are kind of keeping money in the community. I think what would be interesting is if we're talking about getting away from banks or changing the monetary system, if you've heard of a guy named Silvio Gesell, who lived in the early 1900s, and his idea of money is that money needs to rust so that people can't hoard money.
Oh, I wanted to get to Demirage, and we didn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Even with Bitcoin, you can still hoard money. And when people can hoard money, you know, the person who's baking bread can't hoard bread, so they can lose their wealth. Whereas banks can hoard money. They can loan it when they want to loan it. They can loan it at the percentage they want to. And it sounds like Bitcoins are somewhat the same. As you get them, you can just keep them. But I kind of like the idea of money should rust so that people move it. It should... Like people
keep it currency current flow, right?
Yeah, so it buys this many things as it moves on
okay.
down the line.
We got like 2 minutes, so whatever you want to say. Who wants to answer that?
I'd like to get in something just real quick, and that's that, you know, people do need a way to store their wealth. You know, that's a, with what's happened in Cyprus, you know, people need that ability to store their wealth, you know, call it hoarding, call it saving, call it what you will. People do need that. I mean, you can't just live hand to mouth your whole life. You have to, you know, at some point you're going to get old and need some savings to fall back on.
Okay, Isaac, you, and then we're going to hang it up here.
Sure. And I come into Bitcoin with a somewhat different perspective. And there's a variety of problems that are being addressed here. And I think that the Bridgetown Bucks and Bitcoin are both addressing different problems. And the caller's point about hoarding wealth and the idea of money rusting is a very powerful idea. And I don't believe that there's a solution that can be enacted today that could globally shift us into a system where money can rust. So there does have to be multiple solutions and concerted efforts from a lot of different people and different disenfranchised demographics. And so Bitcoin addresses one aspect of that, and it sounds like Bridgetown Bucks addresses another aspect to that.
And finally, Bitcoin is still really new. You know, part of the reason that the value goes up and down so much is nobody really knows exactly how much it's worth because we haven't been dealing with it for very long. You know, a telephone is no good if nobody you know has one. And similarly, Bitcoin is still, you know, making its way. So who knows how it'll end up being used.
And 1 second from you.
I just want to say thank you for having us here today. And I think both of these products bring us around to talking about money, and anytime we can get together and talk some more about money and what it can do for us and how it hurts us is an important thing. So thank you.
I really appreciate all of you being here, actually, and thanks, Carl. And I just want to let people know you've been listening to Laura and Michael Kennedy, Isaac Hart, Stephen Wagner, and Carl Mullen. The first four are all Bitcoin people in one way or another, and Carl is working on something called PDX currency to get Bridgetown Bucks here in Portland in September. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this has been the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. Thanks for your engineering, Kurt, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 12 o'clock straight up. It's time for Jazz Lives.
This is KBOO News at Noon for Wednesday, April 24th, 2013.
While Oregon has long been a leader in the organic, local, and small farm movement, it has often been criticized for neglecting the poor. Now, Oregon farmers are paving the way for having fresh farm produce available to food stamp users. This allows lower-income consumers to purchase seasonal farm-fresh produce at prices often below those available in retail stores. The program launched by Zenger Farm in Portland and now joined by eight other Oregon farms teaches farmers how to adapt their business to comply with federal rules regarding food stamps. Farmers all over the country are taking notice, and the hope is that it will be a change nationwide in food stamp regulations.
Oregon youth may soon be more patriotic, but possibly less tanned, as the Oregon legislature considers two new bills. The Oregon House is considering a bill that requires public schools to display the U.S. flag in classrooms and provide students with time to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. The Oregon Senate is considering a bill that greatly restricts the availability of tanning beds to youth. If under 17, the measure will require minors to secure a doctor's approval. If 17, parental consent would be required.
The Oregon legislature is scheduled to vote today on two tax measures. One is a bill that raises taxes on high-income households and businesses. Top 2% of Oregon's full-year tax filers, slightly more than 30,000 households, would be impacted by the raised taxes. A second vote deals with cutting future public pensions, which would cut $460 million from future payments to public retirees. The measures sharply divide majority Democrats and minority Republicans.
A group of New York State protesters have been jailed for trespassing on property owned by the Energy Corporation of Missouri. The protesters, called the Seneca Lake 12, demonstrated against Energy's plan to use the underground salt caverns adjacent to Seneca Lake in New York for storing natural gas and propane. The protesters maintain that the action will expose local inhabitants to the threat of groundwater contamination and endanger a New York State wonder, the historic Finger Lake region. Other parts of the country where this practice has been used have seen salt caverns collapse, groundwater contaminated, and in some instances, whole communities evacuated.
A years-long investigation into BP's use of deadly dispersants in the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill has revealed major damage to human health and the environment. The investigation was launched by GAP, the nation's leading whistleblower protection and advocacy organization, after repeated complaints were received from Gulf residents and cleanup workers. Complaints centered on claims that official statements from BP and the federal government regarding the use of the dispersant Corexit were false and misleading. The evidence collected indicates the dispersants were even more destructive than the oil spill itself. The investigation charges the dispersant was used because it created the false impression that large quantities of spilled oil were being eliminated. In reality, the oil in the dispersant created a far more toxic mixture than the oil alone. Many people are still sick, and severe environmental impacts are still being felt in the Gulf region.
This is Diane Erickson and Patrick Wilson with the KBOO News at Noon in Portland, Oregon. Tune in every night at 5 o'clock for more local, national, and international news. Thanks for listening.
SolarEnergy.org and KBOO Community Radio will sponsor the 2013 Solar Winery Tour, Saturday, April 27th, featuring three of Oregon's solar-powered wineries. This day-long event includes transportation to and from the Portland area, plus wine tasting, lunch, and solar education tours. More information, including tickets and transportation pickup locations, can be found at www.solarenergy.org or online at the KBOO Community Events page.
KBOO Community Radio continues the broadcast of the 2013 Ilahi Lecture Series on Wednesday, April 24th, when we'll broadcast a talk by Catherine Austin Fitz.
Managing member of SolarEye Investment Advisory Services, Catherine Austin Fitz is also a publisher of the SolarEye Report. She served as Assistant Secretary of Housing, Federal Housing Commissioner in the first Bush administration, and Managing Director of Wall Street firm Dillon Reed & Co., Inc. Fitz has designed and closed over 25 billion transactions and investments to date and has led portfolio investment strategy for $300 billion of financial assets and liabilities.
Catherine Austin Fitz will be speaking at the First Congregational Church in Portland, and KBOO will broadcast the talk live at 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 24th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Ilahi2013.
It's 5 minutes after 12 o'clock. You're at KBOO, and it's time for jazz. This is Jazz Lives, and this is Rita filling in for Nick this afternoon. Let's start off with